Woody Womack here, joined by every single Rivals national analyst, Brady Bunch style. I guess we should do intros right off the top. We'll start with Sam Spiegelman. Sam, how are you?
Doing great, man. How you doing?
Good. Sam covers Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma. Wasn't around when we ranked these draft players, but he can still pretend like he knew everyone was going to be good way before they were. To my right, Adam Gorney, national analyst, West regional analyst. Adam, which states are you responsible for as relates to this draft?
I forget. California, Hawaii, Oregon, Washington, Utah, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, Idaho, and some would say Montana, although Josh Hemholtz should take Montana over for me.
All right. Also on, Chad Simmons. Chad, you also weren't with us during the time of this draft, but of course you were ranking players from where? Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi.
Yeah, throughout the South, yeah, like Tennessee, Louisiana, Arkansas, the Carolinas, you know, back then. So okay. Happy now to have it down to what, three states with Rob Wolf, so that's great.
All right, and below me, Mike Farrell, national recruiting director, can take credit for everyone, can also take blame for everyone.
I take credit for everybody and just blame you guys for the bad ones.
Josh Hemholtz, who covers the Midwest. Josh, I think were you ranking Oklahoma during this time too, in addition to all those other states?
No, I think Oklahoma came in after this. So I've ranked Oklahoma maybe the last three classes, but now Sam Spiegelman has.
Okay, but everywhere else in the Midwest. And then in the bottom, Rob Cassidy. Rob, you were ranking, I think, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi.
Alabama, Mississippi. Yeah, I had Cam Akers.
Okay. And then on the bottom, Adam Friedman, who was ranking the Mid-Atlantic. Is Pennsylvania included? I never know, Friedman.
It is, yeah. So I got, at that time, I had Virginia North up the coast plus West Virginia and Pennsylvania.
All right, and I was ranking during this time Georgia, Tennessee. I also did for some of these guys, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, and everything. So we're just going to run through player by player, kind of have a free-flowing conversation here about the NFL draft and what we remember, what went right, what went wrong. So let's start with Joe Burrow, number one pick most likely, Heisman Trophy winner, kind of came out of nowhere given the way his career started. We ranked him as a three-star, 5.7, lower than some other people. Mike, let's start with you. What do you remember about Burrow and what happened with his ranking?
He was a solid quarterback. I mean, in person showings, I think we saw him once at a camp, and he was, you know, a big kid, had an okay arm, but really not refined at all. And I'm not sure if that's me outgoing or not. I don't think it is, but you know, it took him a long time to develop, obviously, and now he's number one pick in the draft. So it's tough to project these kids sometimes, but I didn't see anything that year on film or in person that led me to believe that he was going to be the number one pick in the NFL draft.
Josh, you got to see him a ton up close and personal in camps, and I don't know if you ever saw him play on a Friday night, but, I mean – what do you think? Did you ever see it perhaps playing out to this scenario with this high of a ceiling for the way Burrow has ended up?
I'm so glad we're starting with the first, you know, pick of the draft, which always reflects so well on me with being Joe Burrow. These are questions I've had to answer a lot more here lately. He was a guy, and for all those people who say you got to go to a Rivals camp to get a rating from Rivals, he went to a Rivals camp. He was a guy who the whole was greater than the sum of the parts. He was a very high football IQ guy. His dad was a coach. The reason why he was in Athens, Ohio, is because his dad was coach at the Ohio University. He always had those intangibles. But from a skill set standpoint, he was a dual threat, but not particularly dynamic as a runner, just a tough kid who, you know, had a little bit of athleticism to him. But as a passer, that was probably the one area that held him back in our ratings, which when you look at it from what he did this past season, where he was one of the most efficient passers to ever play the college game, that certainly was not part of our projection. He was not a guy who, you know, you'd stand there and You know, you see a lot of these quarterbacks, they throw a beautiful football. That was not really Joe Burrow in high school. He didn't throw a lot of spirals. You know, he didn't change velocity exceptionally well. But he certainly has been able to develop during the course of his college career to where those issues that he had in high school were gone. Now, it took 5 years, I think. I mean, obviously, when he was at Ohio State, lost a couple of position battles to some four-star guys. But no doubt in that, you know, he was a clear-cut Heisman Trophy winner. I think, you know, rightly the clear-cut number one pick in this draft.
Now, Rob, I think you were at Semper Fi that year. Do you even remember seeing him at that All-Star game?
Yeah, I do. Sorry, I'm still laughing at Josh that he didn't throw a lot of spirals. I do, vaguely. For whatever reason, I remember Michael McGlinchey from that game more than I do Burrow. I think they were both in the same game. I was – usually, if you walk away from one of those events – and you don't really have a strong take, it means the guy didn't particularly strike you as good or awful. So I would say, you know, I wasn't struck either way by him. I don't really remember much of the day-to-day from Burrow out there.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, like Josh said, he went to Ohio State. He never really was in the mix there. I mean, I think Urban Meyer said he was. The one thing I wanted to talk about, Josh, with you one real quick before we wrap up on Burrow, there's talk of how bad he wanted to go to Nebraska. We know his dad was an assistant there. Is that overblown? Did Nebraska really tell him, you know, we don't want you, like people often say, especially given his, you know, he went to the portal and he didn't end up in Nebraska again. What's your take on that?
I think it's embellished a little bit, or the, you know, people look at, they want to use that as a negative on Nebraska, but no, there's some truth to it. It's probably not as in the time, you know, I never got the sense from him that he was, you know, Nebraska was heads and tails where he had to go. If that option became available, it was an automatic commitment. So I think a little bit of it is embellished, but there's definitely some kernels of truth there with Nebraska just didn't see him as a fit for what they were looking to do.
All right, let's move on from Burrow. The number two likely pick, former five-star Chase Young. This is a guy we had ranked in the top 10, a guy who never came to any camps. We didn't have a chance to see. Adam Friedman, you had a chance to see him up close and personal, especially on Friday nights. And, of course, we all saw him in the All-Star game. But talk to us about why you made that push for him to be five stars and when you kind of knew that he was going to be a special talent.
Yeah, it was pretty evident early on. I saw him when he was at his first high school, St. Vincent Pilate in Laurel, Maryland. Big kid. He had a basketball background. We really liked the way he moved on the field, but he really excelled once he got that position training and really focused his efforts on the football field. I saw him a number of times in practices and games. I think he did a couple of other camps during the offseason leading into his senior year. But a guy who was kind of one of those no-brainers. You see him, you watch his film for maybe a minute or two, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is kind of one of those alpha-type players. He played on a team with a lot of really good players, but you could tell that he was one of those guys that just stood out, and it was not a hard sell to make him a five-star once everybody got a look at him.
For the guys that were at the Army All-American game that year, what were your memories of him? I mean, we look back at the video – and he's going against a lot of first-round picks and stuff like that, and he's dominating. So I think, Josh, you were there. Gorney, were you that year as well?
Yeah, I was there that year. Super aggressive kid. Like Friedman said, just kind of an alpha male that wanted to attack everybody. He kind of reminded me, I think, a little bit of William Anderson this year. Just a guy that wanted to take every rep, wanted to prove himself and get after it. So he was clearly an athletic kid and a physical kid, someone that definitely stood out and more than backed up that five-star ranking.
Mike, what do you remember? I mean, was it a slam dunk to make him a five-star? Because sometimes a guy like him that we don't all see, it makes it a little harder. So what do you remember about his process?
No, he was a slam dunk. I remember when I first watched his film, you know, Friedman was raving about him. And then, you know, I watched his film, and it was clear that he was just an outstanding physical specimen. Great outside pass rusher, tremendous motor. Wasn't the friendliest kid in the world, remember, Friedman?
Yeah, you know, he's one of those guys who was extremely focused on his craft and didn't have a lot of time for the recruiting process, talking about the recruiting process, and just all of the shenanigans that goes on around players these days. But
he hated the recruiting process.
He definitely did. But, you know, being, you know, here in the DMV, Washington, D.C. area, you know, he always had people around him who were kind of his inner circle, people who he could trust, people he relied on. And there were a few coaches who really kind of helped take them. They really took him under their wing and helped him through the process. But he was looped in with a lot of guys who were familiar with the process, even from the basketball side too. So he definitely had a lot of information at his disposal and was going to, you know, really just stay focused on achieving his goals.
Is anyone else?
He wasn't pushed. The more they push in Maryland, D.C., sometimes the more questionable the player is. And Chase Young was.
Well, I think that goes for every state.
Yeah, well, I like to just focus on Maryland, D.C., because they do pump up some kids, especially D.C., and, you know, this kid didn't need any of that. You know, so it wasn't one of those things where we saw him and he was like four, and then just get hammered, and then you keep watching them, and you're like, oh, yeah, maybe he's a five. He was a five from the start, didn't need any of that publicity or press or anything like that. And, you know, sometimes the kids who hate the recruiting process are the best ones. I'm not saying that kids should hate the recruiting process because we'll be out of jobs, but, you know, Jonah Williams? He hated the recruiting process. He turned out to be pretty good too. So sometimes these
Jerry Judy, also on that list,
and the Boza brothers.
At least Jerry Judy.
Oh God, yes. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and Bosa's.
And we could segue into Jerry Judy now if you want to talk about the wide receivers, or you can go back to quarterback. What do you?
We can go back three. I wanted to say that Chase is another tough one for the you have to go to a rivals camp to get ranked crowd.
Yeah,
that was a tough one.
No, he didn't come to anything.
He's the number two player in the country. Crazy.
All right, we can talk about Jerry Judy next. This was a guy, he may have not liked the recruiting process from a standpoint of like doing interviews and stuff like that, but I mean, he was an ultimate competitor. This was a guy that would show up to anything, anytime, anywhere, and go over and over again. So Rob, tell us what you remember, because I think Judy was kind of on the scene by the time you came to Florida, because he was known as an underclassman. What do you remember most about him?
I remember the first time I met him thinking this kid is impossible to talk to. Like, it was like talking to a wall. He was a very, very, very shy kid, not comfortable at all with interviews, which is different because a lot of these Florida kids have a little bit of swagger to them, and they'll talk to you and they'll chat you up. Judy was reserved. He had just transferred high schools. I think when I got here, he had gone from Monarch to Deerfield Beach. And our thing with Judy was we had him as a very high four, I think, for most of the time, 6.0. Because in games, they didn't really have a quarterback at Deerfield to get him the ball. So we loved him at camps, but the question mark was he doesn't really do it in games as much. And then his senior year, he started to. And I think that's kind of what put us over the edge. I think maybe in the second to last update, we made him a five-star, and I don't think anybody regrets that. Just the separation he would get, I think, was the calling card. Because we'd see him line up at elite camps against elite DBs. I mean, you name them. Even younger guys like the Patrick Surtains of the world and guys in Florida. And the separations that he would get from those guys consistently, I think, kind of blew you away. And we moved him up before All-Star season.
It was actually after the five-star challenge. Because I remember it was in Atlanta that year, and he was so dominant in the early one-on-ones. He was just by far the best route runner and guy for separation. And then he kind of disappeared a little bit in the 7-on-7. And that's, of course, quarterback generated. You know, it depends on your quarterback's vision. And I don't think he was on a very good 7-on-7 team.
I think he was on the famous worst 7-on-7 team of all time that I drafted that didn't win a game.
Was that the team wearing white?
Yeah, it was him, Nate Craig Myers. I mean, yeah. It was just a disaster. I don't think they might have scored one touchdown in four games.
They were horrible. But I remember having the discussion about Judy in between the one-on-ones and the little break that the kids got before the 7-on-7, and we talked about it. We're like, wow, this was one of the best performances we've seen in a very long time from a receiver as far as polished and able to set people up. And it almost seemed like he could do it when he wanted to, and he didn't always want to. You know, like when he wasn't involved in the 7-on-7, he's like, yeah, you know, whatever. I'm still great. But, yeah, I remember the moment
that I saw him and said, you know, okay, let's discuss this. And it was that June we moved him up, and it kind of worked out pretty well.
So, yeah, it worked out darn well.
So I remember seeing Judy in a – I met Judy with – he was on the same team with Calvin Ridley and his brother, Riley. And
lots of Jerry, talkers there, huh?
Right, and Jerry Judy. And I remember – I remember meeting them in a parking lot at some – at like a Miami Dolphins 7-on-7 to do interviews. And, I mean, it was just torture trying to get anything out of – but think about that
the Ridleys, team. Man. The Ridleys were the same way.
Right, but think about that high. There was a high school team that had two first round picks, and I think what was the other Ridley, a third round pick. I mean, how did they not win the state?
And they didn't win the state championship.
I don't even know if they made the playoff.
And you know who else was on that team? It was a freshman Greg Russo from Miami.
Yeah. So I mean, what an insane team. But yeah, Judy would go – there were – if you remember, there was a clip from him from, like, Friday Night Lights at Florida's camp where he just went – everybody knew he wasn't going to Florida, but he went to the camp anyway, I think, for a visit. Then he decided to work out, and there was, like, a viral video of him just roasting kids during one-on-ones. Do you guys remember that clip?
Yeah, I do. He was one of those guys, like you mentioned. Him, just like that running back at Miami, Cam Davis, where you could go to a camp in, like, Arkansas and you'd run into Jerry Judy. Hey, what are you doing here? There's nothing going on in Florida, man. You know, he was just always at something. Yeah, no matter where you were. I mean, you could have been in Pennsylvania and it wouldn't have been that big of a shock to stumble into Jerry Judy running at some scam 7-on-7 camp in Pennsylvania.
So we did talk about when we moved him up. We were kind of an outlier though. Mike, do you remember we were kind of on a limb in terms of ranking Judy as a 5-star?
Everybody had him as a high 4, you know. I mean, I'm not saying that we were the only ones that said, hey, this kid's great. Everybody knew he was really, really good. You know, there was a lot of discussion that year as far as the kids going to Alabama between Henry Ruggs, and we could segue into Henry Ruggs if you want, you know, and Jerry Judy, which one was the better receiver going to Alabama that year. So, you know, not really an outlier. An outlier to me is, you know, we had him as 5. Someone else has him outside their top 100 or something like that. I think everybody knew he was good, but you know, we went all in on him more so than the other receivers in this class, and I think it's going to pan out that way.
See, I really liked Ruggs, and I remember he came to the 5-star and did not impress you as much, but he did. He had a bad weekend there, but I'd seen him in games, and I liked him. What did we end up ranking him? He's well inside the 100, right?
Ruggs was he's a high 4-star still, but he certainly wasn't anywhere near 5-star. And you know what? I remember seeing him, and I was like, this kid ain't fast. That just shows you what I know. I mean, you know, Leonard does not have breakaway speed, and Patrick Mahomes is not a good draft pick.
To be fair to you, and I'll play Mike apologist too.
I kept bugging you about it. I'm like, where's the separation? He was not separating.
He was one of these kids, and this goes both ways sometimes. Where I went and saw him in games. I went and saw him in 2 games, and he was incredible. And then I'm like, all right, I can't wait for you to see this guy. I can't wait for you to see this guy. Get him to the 5-star in front of you, and he just craps the bed.
Yeah, that was 125, 19th at receiver.
It was, yeah. I mean, so I talked him up, and I always tell these kids when I'm ranking them, and they're complaining to me about their rankings. I say, hey, man, help me help you. You know, if I bring you in for a Farrell, you have to make me look like the things I've said about you are true. And he just didn't want to get out of bed that day, or I don't know what, and it was over.
Yeah, but that's fine. So, I mean, we obviously ranked him. We ranked him too low, and that's on me for sure. But
it's not, though. It's kind of on him. Like, well, he did have a bad day.
You know, again, but here's the thing. You know, film doesn't lie. We all knew he was a tremendous athlete. You know, we knew he was a track kid. We knew this, that, and the other. He was little. He was little, and he wasn't that fast at that event, which was hilarious. I don't think he was trying, you know, and – you know, sometimes they just don't want to, you know, sometimes prospects just don't want to get up and compete or try for whatever reason. I mean, there's plenty of reasons, but yeah, Ruggs was a guy that I wasn't as high on as everybody else. And
they were all 3 on that 7-on-7 team, Nate Craig Myers, Judy Ruggs, that scored like 1 touchdown. None of them tried. That was it.
No, they quit early too. I mean, they were quitters. I mean, midway through the first 7-on-7 game, I remember one of the quarterbacks was Joey Gatewood, who was
he was on my team.
Yeah, he was a freshman, though, so he didn't really – I think he was a rising sophomore. He didn't know what he was doing. Who was your other quarterback?
I can't remember. I have to go back and look at the photo.
It was bad, and they just knew that their quarterbacks so were not going to throw them accurate footballs, and they just gave up halfway through the first game. And it was the worst performance I've ever seen from a team at the Five-Star Challenge, hands down.
It was bad.
So there was debate. It kind of at the time between the various ranking services – it was like you were either Team Judy or Team Ruggs. Chad, you were ranking Alabama at that time before you worked at Rivals. What did you end up doing with Ruggs and Judy when you were trying to sort them out?
Yeah, we had them basically in the same group. Neither one ended up a five-star for us. Both ended up high four-stars, having Judy above Ruggs back then. We thought Judy was much more of a polished, you know, route runner, a more polished, pure receiver. I saw both play live, and I went all in kind of on Judy when I was there at the Friday Night Lights you were referring to, Woody, at Florida before his senior season. He put on a show and just play after play and just quietly, you know, dominated that camp in Gainesville. I saw Ruggs. I started getting film on him before I ever saw football was basketball, him running the court, throwing down dunks. And, you know, Mike talked about him being small, thin, not super long, but man, the explosiveness, you know, his hops, his ups, the way he ran the court, made me drive quickly over to Montgomery that later that week to see him for the first time. But we thought Judy was a better just overall receiver. We had both those guys in the top 50-ish range, but neither were a five-star for us.
Yeah, Ruggs is super quiet. Like he was one of these wide receiver, big time diva personalities. So that also, I think, hurt him at camps, like Mike said.
Well, usually the fast kids are the loudest, you know. And he definitely wasn't a kid who was. But you don't have to be flash. I mean, you just have to separate and make.
Yeah, he and Judy both were pretty reserved by wide receiver standards go.
Yeah, but Judy, I agree. Judy just dominated everything he went to, and Ruggs.
Yeah, but he wasn't one of these loud like.
But I don't know.
Kids.
Ruggs, okay. You know, track times are important, and, you know, you got to look at that stuff sometimes. And my bad.
So somebody we can celebrate, take a victory lap on, Mike, is C.D. Lamb, even though you wanted him even higher. We ranked him in – I think we ranked him in the 75 range. A lot of other people didn't have him in the top 200. I think Nick was doing the rankings at that time in Texas, but what did you see that you really liked?
Yeah, Nick was doing the rankings, and, you know, it's a delicate thing where you don't want to step on someone's toes too much. And I liked CeeDee Lamb a lot. You know, his body control, his ability, obviously, to separate downfield. He was sort of a long stride and skinny kid who put up big, big numbers and caught everything that came his way. You know, did I see, you know, DeAndre Hopkins? No, we didn't see DeAndre Hopkins in high school. So, but I did see a kid that I wrote about immediately after that was just ranked too low. And you get that feeling, you know, it comes to you after we lock the rankings, you wake up the next couple of days and you're like, oh, what did I do? You know, Josh Booty is one of them in this class, in the 2020 class. Garrett Wilson was one last year. And, you know, sometimes they're just like, oh, I probably should have pushed or should have done something. So I felt CD was much higher, but we still had him, I think, higher than most people.
Yeah, he was a guy who was a regular at our camps, especially early in his career. Josh, do you remember ever seeing him down there in Dallas or anybody else? I mean, I'm trying to – I think he went to Houston one year and Dallas another year, both as underclassmen, but I wasn't at those camps. Were you there, Josh?
If I was, it wasn't one I remember that strongly.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, he was kind of a guy who, when you look back at the film, I mean, he did really well, but, it, you know, it's definitely hard. But we could take a win, Mike. I mean,
But he was also one of those kids who didn't like the process and was very, very invested in his ranking. You know, and sometimes, I don't know. That could be a red flag, but with him it wasn't.
Yeah, when I talked to him at the College Football Awards about his ranking, he was like, I hate Rivals.
He does.
He hates rivals, and rightfully so. We are hateable people.
Well, he must hate everybody else even more. We had a ring tire than everybody else.
Right. That, well, then he was like, I should have come to more of y'all's camps. And then I went and looked, and he came to, like, three camps. So
Yeah. No, that wasn't his fault. It was, well, I'm, you know, it's easy to blame ex-employees, but that's what I'm going to do.
Well, we still, he's a win for us, even though he's going to be a first rounder, so technically a loss. But
no, a four-star going in the first round is a win.
Okay.
Period.
Your audio is
a win. I think it's the one is echoing.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Justin.
Now, Gorney saw him. Gorney saw CD.
Yeah, I saw him. I saw him in Vegas, and the two things I remember from him is he mossed some kid and then looked at him for about 2 minutes. And then I talked to him afterward, and he was like, why are you even approaching me to talk to me? He was that, you know, it was not the there, but he was very good in Vegas. He's like Mike said, he's this kind of long, bouncy, athletic kid that you could just tell was a pretty special player, but definitely not the most approachable kid out there.
And yeah, but if you called him Sidarian, he would get very, very upset.
He would get mad at Sidarian. Yeah, he didn't like that.
Yeah, so definitely a dog factor is higher.
I believe De'Aaron King was the quarterback on that 7-on-7 team too.
Oh wow! Okay, all right. That's a pretty good team. All right, so now we'll move on to a complete failure. Justin Jefferson, who was a 5.22 star. Mike and Gorney, you guys wrote about him this week. I think the buck falls with me technically because I think I took over Louisiana midstream, and he was a guy who came to our camp in. Louisiana. He did pretty decent at the camp. He was a guy who tested really slow, though, at other events. And I think I might have seen him at LSU's camp. Sam, do you remember seeing him? You were down in Louisiana at that time. Do you remember following him at the time?
Yeah, I covered the whole family. Justin was doing this Friday night for Destrehan. They have one of the best offenses in all Louisiana. He played with John Emery, who was, you know, someone that I covered as well. And LSU loved Jefferson from the moment he stepped on campus. Obviously, they knew about him because of his two older brothers that played at LSU. That summer, we were both at LSU camp, and it was a famous battle between Justin Jefferson and Amik Robertson. Both wound up with LSU offers. Obviously, Amik went to La Tech. Justin had some great issues, but on the field, like despite a, you know, a 4.8 40 time, he dominated LSU camp. That was guys like Todd Harris and Amik that he was beating. So even though the testing numbers weren't there, he still separated. He still caught everything thrown his direction, contested or not. And on Friday nights, he was averaging 100 yards and two or three touchdowns a week. So he was productive. And from Damian Craig to Mickey Joseph, LSU stayed on him. And he worked his butt off that spring, that summer to get eligible. And right around the end of June, early July, he qualified, and LSU took him without hesitating.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that really happened with him is he had one offer from Nichols State, and I think I assumed he was going to sign FCS or so, and we didn't really think about it again after that. Chad, do you remember him at all?
I remember him not like Sam does, not making plays like that every time. I did see him play one time. I think it was against Edna Carr. I saw him play. I remember Michael Young, I think with Notre Dame, I believe, kind of made the plays that night when I was there. We had him as like the lowest of low three stars back in my time covering Louisiana. Did not see him as an LSU type of kid for sure. Definitely not a first rounder that he's grown into, but yeah, I remember him vaguely. Didn't see him a lot in person other than that one time at a game. I think he had a couple of catches, no touchdowns that I recall that night. I remember the running back athlete Michael Young kind of stole the show when I was there in the Destrehan offense.
Yeah, I do remember that. Mike, so how bad do you feel about this one? What would we when it comes to he gets called in the first round?
No, I feel horrible. It's awful. I mean, 5'2 is the lowest we can go, right? So I saw him in New Orleans, though. You remember that camp was loaded with wide receivers and he wasn't one of those guys. You know, so, I mean, what are you going to do? Should he have been at 5'5", 3", you know? Yeah, not any higher than that, though, with the speed issues. So, you know, it's going to look bad, but listen, you know, if he goes on to a great career like Russell Wilson or J.J. Watt, we can talk about him, you know, as one of those two-star misses.
Those are suspicious times, though. It might have been – the not caring running times at 4A because he ran 4.43 at the combine. So somebody taught him how to run.
Well, kids do get faster sometimes when they go off to college, but I think, the combination of academics and lack of speed got us. And the fact that he was a late addition, I think we just dropped the ball.
All right, moving on to the quarterbacks. Let's jump into Justin Herbert. This was a guy we ranked as a three-star, a dude that we never saw. He was a multi-sport athlete. I think he got hurt maybe between his junior and senior year. So even if we would have seen him at a camp, we didn't. And Oregon just kind of took him, and we just viewed it as them taking a local kid. And they were kind of on a string there of rough quarterback takes after Marcus Mariota. Gorney, the buck stops with you on this one. What do you remember? I mean, did you just put on the film of him playing Eugene and figure this is a three-star?
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it came down to. He missed part of his junior season, I think half, with a knee injury. He was hurt and out for that part. He didn't go to any camps. He didn't play on any 7-on-7 teams that I remember. And there are some 7-on-7 teams in Portland that, go to events. Quiet kid. Didn't talk a lot. Didn't have offers. Looks good on film. Had a big time arm. There's no doubt about that. And was a big kid that looked good. But tape can be deceiving sometimes, especially when he's playing competition near Eugene, Oregon. So, this was a thing where he looked good. You put a 3-star ranking on him, and then you look like an idiot a few years later because he's so good. But he wasn't anywhere. He didn't go anywhere. He didn't play any elite competition, and so this was definitely a miss.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the 7-on-7 factor. The infrastructure that is in Oregon right now at 7-on-7 and the big team out there, it wasn't there at that time. Do you think if he was coming out now, I mean, he's a quiet, super quiet kid anyway, but don't you think he probably would have been involved and would have seen him more if he was coming through in 2020 instead of 2016?
Yeah, it's interesting because now every quarterback plays 7-on-7 if they're quiet or loud or whatever. But he was a kid who grew up in Eugene. His family were Oregon season ticket holders. Once he got that offer, I don't know if he would have been all that interested in traveling up and down the coast playing 7-on-7 every weekend. He just doesn't seem like that type. And that has really been kind of the question heading into the draft is he kind of a locker room leader? Is he vocal enough to command an NFL team? All those kinds of things. And, really the question is he almost too smart and nerdy to be an NFL quarterback? I mean, that's really what we're asking. So I don't know. I mean, a lot of, Josh Rosen played 7-on-7 every weekend and he was a pretty big nerdy kid. So it would have been interesting to see if FSP or one of the Seattle teams or really even one of the California teams kind of went up and snagged him and flew him around every weekend to play, because that's kind of how it goes with 7-on-7 out here. But he was a Eugene kid. He wanted to go to Oregon his whole life. Once he got the offer, it was pretty much over. His brother has followed him there now. He's a tight end. So I don't know if he would have been really this big-time camp guy and flying all around the country to play 7-on-7 either.
Mike, I mean, I'm sure maybe you took a peek at his film at the time. Do you remember at all anything about it? Because, he kind of came out of nowhere. He didn't really have a bunch of offers, and when he committed, we had to rank him.
Yeah, he was a tall, skinny, awkward looking kid, put up big numbers. But again, the level of competition, there's just no way to see. It's funny, you see these guys now, and then you realize you missed on them, and then you see the next kid who looks just like them, which to me is Jay Butterfield, going to the same school, and then you're like, okay, we're not going to do this twice. We're not going to miss on this kid. And then, that kid probably won't pan out. So you can't overreact to this stuff. You just have to and I'm not saying Jay Butterfield's career is over. He hasn't even played yet, but you just can't overreact to that stuff.
That's what I always say. We had this conversation about somebody put out a study saying, teams don't like tall cornerbacks anymore because all the cornerbacks getting drafted in last year's draft were 5'10". And it's that's because there weren't any good tall cornerbacks. I feel like we jump to trends too much in this industry sometimes, where if something happens in one draft, we decide that's the rule going forward, but the rule will change next year when all the corners are 6'2",
All right, so
look at, Zach Allen is similar, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he bounced around and went to Wyoming, so I mean.
But I mean,
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen, I'm sorry. Yeah. It's just one of those things where you just, you know, you don't get enough of evaluation of them. You know, we never saw Carson Wentz. So, you know, these guys just obviously go into the right system and they mature and become, you know, excellent quarterbacks. And, you know, but then you do look for guys like that. You know, it's just hard to find. A quarterback is tough. There's just no doubt about it. It's very difficult.
All right. Next.
So much about the right situation. It's crazy.
Next up, Tua Tagovailoa, who I affectionately referred to as Tua Star when he was in high school. Gorney, we'll start with you. We saw Tua at a couple different camps. He flew over from Hawaii to come to the Rivals camp, did pretty good at the quarterback challenge, won an award. But, you know, we didn't have him as a five-star, and kind of seeing him live and seeing his arm, I don't think any of us were really super enamored, even though we did rank him pretty high.
Yeah, the thing that I always loved about Tua was that he made every throw look super easy, and he never seemed to struggle at any time. He never really had a bad 7-on-7 game. I saw him a ton in 7-on-7. He was at a tournament in Vegas, a lot in California, and then he did our camp circuit, I think, for 2 years. So we saw a lot of him. Made all the throws look very, very easy. What kind of reserved me on Tua was that he didn't really look all that impressive physically. He wasn't that big. He was probably a shade under 6 feet. And at that time, we were super down on quarterbacks that were that short. He was a lefty, which Mike could speak to, which we're not super, super crazy about. You know, and so what we also didn't want to do is just say, you know, any quarterback from Hawaii who, after Marcus Mariota, needs to be a five-star quarterback without question. So there were some reservations. Probably we overthought it a little bit too much. But he was a kid that really in college made himself look much more athletic than he did in high school, because he wasn't this physically gifted quarterback in high school. You could take a look at the pictures. But every throw, you know, short, middle, deep, looked great. And he always looked like that. So, you know, he was, I think, our third dual threat quarterback in that class. I would kill to redo that and make him at least second. I'm not going to mention the name of who's number two. But in our defense, he was not this surefire five-star looking quarterback like a Trevor Lawrence or somebody else.
But he did finish as a number 53 player in that class. And I think he was a guy that, the more we watched him, the more we appreciated what he brought to the table. Because like you said, first impressions, not overwhelming. He's no Tate Martell there, is he Adam Gorney?
I said don't mention it.
Definitely no Tate Martell.
And I saw him at the Army. He was a guy that the more you watched just the little things that he did well, the way he was able to feel the pocket, step up, make throws, keep his eyes downfield, the more we watched him, the more we appreciated, you know, what he brought to the table.
Mike, when it came down to it at the end there, I don't remember there being a heavy debate. I remember you talking, we talked a lot about Tate, and Tate was one of those guys that was giving you nightmares about whether you were going to be right or wrong on. So do you remember the final discussion on Tua?
Yeah, I think Gorney brainwashed me on Tate.
I tried, guys.
He freaking wore me down. Okay. He just did. And then I started buying into the Kool-Aid, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid. And Tua, you know, listen, everybody knows I'm not a big lefty quarterback fan. I think it's just historical. You know, the last really good one as far as a passer was Steve Young. And I guess, you know, you could say Mark Brunell and Michael Vick and those guys had success, but, you know, different levels. The ball comes off usually a little bit odd, but he had a really good throwing motion for a lefty. And I just think he didn't overwhelm you with his physical skills. And I think he went into the right situation with the right receivers and the right offensive line and the right running backs. And I think at Alabama, he killed it. I don't think he's a guy who would take a team on his shoulders that didn't have that much talent, which is why, you know, with the injuries, I'm really confused as to why he's going to be a top five pick.
So that was one of the things that I remember us talking about was at the time, you mentioned Marcus Mariota, Gorney. Wasn't the Oregon coaching staff like down on him at the time and was kind of telling anybody who had listened that he wasn't a priority for them?
Tua?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tua at first wanted to go to Oregon. He was kind of following in Mariota's footsteps. He really liked the offense there. And then they kind of, I don't know if cold is the right word on him, but didn't come after him as much. And so it became a USC-Alabama battle. And USC really, really wanted him. They loved him. And it looked like the feeling was that USC was going to win out. Then he takes that visit to Alabama, had an outstanding time. They took him to church there. The outside of football was super important to him and still is. And so I think that's going to be a factor too. But, you know, as we go into this draft too, there are all those questions about, you know, does he have that dog mentality? Could he make it in the SEC? And, he is an interesting personality because he's laid back like a lot of Hawaiian kids are, but super competitive once he steps on the field. So it was definitely an interesting pick because for a long time, Alabama was really not in the picture. It felt like a USC-Oregon battle. Then it felt like a USC-Alabama battle with USC leading. And then he ended up at Alabama, which was a perfect situation for him. I mean, USC has had some good receivers over the last few years, but, nothing like Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Devontae Smith. The offensive line that he's played behind, he would have never found at USC. He would have been running for his life like Sam Darnold did. And then the running backs that they've had at Alabama. So it was a perfect situation for him.
All right, another guy that we can take a victory lap on, Jeffrey Okuda. We did rank him as a five-star. I pretty much think he was a five-star from the get-go. But, Mike, we viewed him as a safety, and we ranked him as a safety. And I think he used to argue with us about it. So tell us about that.
Yeah, he started off as a safety, and we never changed him. You know, I think about him, you know, and Minka Fitzpatrick being sort of similar guys. Could play safety, could play corner. Sort of Swiss Army knife type of guys, very athletic, good size, very fluid. We moved Fitzpatrick to safety from corner, and he's sort of that hybrid guy. I think Okuda could do either at the NFL level, but he's really been excellent in solo coverage. But the thing that stood out to me is when we saw him at camps, you know, usually safeties struggle in the one-on-ones, and he did not struggle at all. He covered like a corner. And I think that's what you're remembering is that we kept bringing up that this kid is a safety who covers like a corner. He's elite. He's special. Probably could have moved him to cornerback, but I don't care either way. I mean, I think he's going to be a tremendous defensive back and clearly the best one in this draft. And, you know, we have the film of him going against CeeDee Lamb. You know, we saw him at the five-star and just a kid that was very, very instinctual and fluid on an island with a safety body.
I think he was on that same 7-on-7 team with so there was a 7-on-7 team that had Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, and Jeffrey Okuda, and they couldn't win a game.
They lost every game by like 30 points.
They scored one touchdown in four games. It was horrible. Joey Gatewood, man, that Nate Craig Myers, jeez.
Well, Nate Craig Myers got hurt, but
no, he got fake hurt. That's what happened. I remember this well because I drafted this piece of crap. That was the linchpin. Nate Myers got fake injured, and then everybody else quit. In the
fake injury.
So, well, anyway, Mike, we saw him. We saw the progression. I mean, this was a guy who was at everything. I think he went to. He went to Future 50. He came to he came to our camp. He came to 2 5-star challenges. Was this as a slam dunk as it gets when you were talking about evaluating a DB?
Yeah, and he was a super focused kid, super nice kid. Knew what he wanted. Went to Ohio State because he felt that was where he was going to develop the most, and where they give him a shot at playing corner. And if that didn't work out, he could move to safety. But you know, just really a no-brainer. I mean, I don't know if there's anything to brag about because he was so good. Everybody here, you know, that was at that 5-star challenge, you know, his first one, because I remember he was there as an underclassman, was just like, yeah, this kid's a special talent. So it wasn't like we saw a diamond in the rough. He was just really, really good.
All right, let's move on to Tristan Wirfs, the offensive lineman from the University of Iowa. Josh, this was your eval, a guy we ranked pretty high. Was, if I remember, was pretty raw, but was always a good athlete. So what do you remember about Tristan?
We actually started really low. He was a low 3-star on our first evaluation of him. Watching him on film, he was a light puncher. I mean, you look at an offensive tackle going to Iowa, you expect a mauler, and that was not what we saw out of Tristan Wirfs. And there were a lot of other people in the state who had a higher opinion of him than I did early on and kept saying, hey, this is a guy to keep watching. Outstanding thrower in track and field. I believe he was state champion, multi-state champion. So an athletic kid, but he didn't really move up to where he finished until after his Army Bowl performance, All-American Bowl performance. He was a guy that, again, we talked about with Tua, you had to kind of watch and appreciate. I think that was the same way with Wirfs. You know, what I saw initially of him was not really that impressive, and his initial rating reflected that. The more we watched him, the more we came to appreciate the skill set and his potential, really, because it was a potential thing with Tristan Wirfs, and he fulfilled that potential.
Gorney, do you remember him from that year at Army? I mean, that was if you go back and look at the rosters there, I mean, he was battling Derek Brown and Chase Young and a few others.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember him all that much. Not a guy that I was like, wow, this is definitely someone that we need to move up in the rankings. So not much help with Tristan.
All right, so let's stay on offensive linemen. I kind of want to run through some of these guys relatively quickly. Andrew Thomas from Georgia. Chad, we can start with you on him. You and I can kind of go back and forth. We ranked him as a 4-star. He moved kind of up and down for us. Mainly, my concern was how was the old dog factor. I just wondered how much he really wanted it. But I remember him being a super athlete who kind of played both ways in high school. So what do you remember about him, Chad?
Yeah, I remember exactly feeling the same way, Woody. I mean, I think we had him in that 45 range is where he finished for me, where I was at in that time. And I kind of said the same. I mean, I took a lot of heat from people around him when I did kind of like my final eval, calling him more of a finesse offensive lineman, not near the dog that I saw in his teammate at that time, Jamari Sawyer. Didn't finish his block. You know, wasn't the most athletic, but fundamentally sound. But at the same time, I would defend him a little bit in that same article by saying he played both ways. He played for a private school, Pace Academy, that won a state championship. He played D-line, offensive line all the time for 4 quarters. So he was good. He was very smart, fundamentally sound. Didn't really blow me away in any phase of his game, but had a great frame. He worked hard, just a strong overall player. I think a lot of what we see now, I think he had a very good career at Georgia. Obviously, he'll be a first-round guy, but I think there's still questions and concerns about his athleticism, how he moves on his feet, his balance a little bit. But, yeah, I didn't see that, as you said, Woody, that dog, that toughness, that finishing attitude in Thomas.
He was a guy that was around a lot, too, especially from early on in his career. We saw him as a freshman, I think, at the Rivals camp, but he was always at events, and I wonder – if we might have just evaluated him a little bit too much, do you think maybe we saw too much of him or knew too much of him?
You know, I would say no. I mean, I still feel good about where he was ranked. I mean, to me, when I compare guys like my top O tackles, I mean, to me, he's not even close to a Laramie Tunsil type when I evaluated, you know, O-line offensive tackles. So, I mean, Laramie was one of my top O-line O-tackle I've ever covered, I would say, from an athletic standpoint to a projection standpoint. I didn't see that in Andrew Thomas. Now, will Andrew have a better career? Who knows, in the NFL than Laramie? But I wouldn't say we overevaluated, in my opinion. I still feel good about where he was ranked. Again, top 50 player in the country overall. That's a pretty high ranking.
Yeah, I think I finished 88. Mike, you never saw him, right?
Never saw him.
Regional.
No, I saw him.
Oh, you did, okay.
Yeah, I think he was. Is this me with the echo?
No, we got it. So coming on chats sometime.
All right. I think he's a victim of Jamari Sawyer.
I think when they would show up to camps together, Sawyer would put everybody on the ground and finish every block and kill people. And Thomas was more of a finesse guy. And, you know, I remember you specifically stating that you were worried about the dog factor in him and how aggressive he was. And, you know, it was a surprise to me that he played as a true freshman, you know, because I didn't think physically he was ready for that. You know, so he's had a great career at Georgia, but he just wasn't a guy that struck you as a mean physical kid as an offensive lineman and got more by on his footwork and things like that. But begrudgingly, he kept moving up the rankings. And I say begrudgingly because I know you weren't a big fan of his. And every time he would move up, you'd be like, oh, you need the dog factor. And you know, we'll see how he pans out. I mean, he's really good at run blocking. Pass pro is a little bit of an issue now, and that could be an issue in the NFL.
All right, moving on to the next one. I'm gonna take a win on this one, and that's Jedrick Wills.
Yeah.
Mike, I think you and I kind of ran the Jedrick fan club. We saw him as an underclassman. He was really kind of out of shape. He didn't look like anything, but he just was so technically sound. So we had him basically. I think we made him a 5-star after we saw him at the as an underclassman at the 5-star challenge, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a kid, when you looked at him, you're like, okay, guard, road grader, out of shape. And then you watch him play tackle, and his reset was one of the best I've seen in the last probably 10 years. His feet are just so elite, and there was just no one who could get past him. It didn't matter. You could counter, you could, you know, whatever your first move was, he was ready for you. And then your counter, he was ready for you as well. He just dominated people that first year and then the second year as well. So he was a complete no-brainer. But I swear, if you lined up 10 offensive linemen and didn't look at film and didn't watch them compete and said, which one is the 5-star, he'd be the last kid you would have picked.
Yeah, for sure. And he was a guy that he did, though, transform physically. I mean, if you looked at him from the first time we saw him heading into his junior year to the Under Armour game when he was a senior, I mean, it totally different. I mean, just a physical transformation in a guy that looked totally different. And we were out on a limb, right? I think we were the only ones that ranked him as a 5-star.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people might have thought to move him to guard or start him at guard or, you know, project him at guard. So, you know, he's one of those that you definitely have to see to appreciate. Because I was skeptical. I mean, the first time I saw him, I'm like, really? And then I, you know, so you see him and you see how technically sound he is and how great he was. But it's hard to describe how well he worked off of contact and the second move of somebody. I've never seen him flat footed. I've never seen him just whiff. And that's impressive for a guy who, you know, not only plays, you know, at the SEC level, but I just think he's a plug-in guy at the NFL level and a 10 to 12 year, you know, Pro Bowler.
All right. Next up, another former 5-star, Derrick Brown. We can start with, I guess we'll start with Chad.
We'll start with Chad because
we saw him kind of grow up. Really curious to talk about Derrick.
Yeah, I think it was pretty evident. You know, he was an athletic big guy. You know, the biggest thing I remember about Derrick is, you know, my only real hesitation or questions was that he did take plays off. You know, he wanted to take over a game. He could dominate and truly become that game changer. I don't know if he ever, you know, got bored because of the success he had. But he really put, you know, Lanier High School on the map, which is just a few miles down the road from the powerful program Buford High School here in Georgia. And I remember him getting upset with me back in the day because his profile said Lanier High School in Buford, Georgia. It should have been Sugar Hill, Georgia. He got mad because they're calling him Buford. But he was an elite talent. You know, I thought he was a little bit soft, you know, as far as just strength. But, man, when he wanted to dominate, he could really change a game. And really the same way he did at Auburn the last couple of years. And I'm not surprised at all. He was, I think, a fairly easy call for a 5-star defensive tackle. I think he broke a lot of hearts when he announced on signing day he was going to Auburn, not staying home and going to Georgia. He had Georgia thinking they were going to land him and went to Auburn on signing day. But a great get for Rodney Garner, what he does as far as D-line development. But a nimble kid athletically, you know, moved well laterally, quick off the ball, very disruptive, wasn't just good against the run, but get penetration and rush the passer as well. So I think one of the most balanced guys. If he plays consistently with that energy level, he can be a great in the NFL too.
Yeah, Mike, he kind of took off like a rocket. I mean, we saw him, I think Chad and I were probably both at the same event. We saw him in this weird like soccer stadium workout when he was like a sophomore. And then he came to the regional camp, did well. And then next thing you know, he's in at the five-star challenge. But I do remember there being a little bit of debate because sometimes he wouldn't be super impressive. Like Chad said, he'd maybe take plays off. And even at camps, he would struggle sometimes as a pass rusher.
Yeah, he was a potential guy for sure. You know, he was built the way you want him. Every once in a while, he could shoot the gap, you know, but he also could get stoned and give up. You know, I think he was a guy that got frustrated pretty easily when he was young, when someone, you know, did stop him or you know, gave him a good battle. But, you know, we kept waiting for that, you know, potential number one player in the country. Cause I remember early on, we were talking about him as one of the top five players in the country. And we just never saw it consistently, but he was definitely potential wise, one of those guys you just definitely got to give five stars to and see if he pans out. And he's had one of the best college careers of a defensive tackle you're ever going to see. And I think if there's, you know, one kid in this draft that people are overlooking, that's a no-brainer, can't-miss kid. It's Derek Brown.
So, Mike, he was very athletic. I mean, he was when Chad and I first met him, he was a basketball player too, and he's always been like a freak athlete at his size. What do you think happened with his testing at the combine, though? He didn't – I mean, because we know he did have a tendency to maybe put on a little bit of weight. Do you think maybe that happened ahead of the combine? Because his numbers were not great.
Yeah, I mean, well, he also is a massive kid. You know, I mean, when you look at – when you compare him to like a Christian Wilkins, you know, or a Dexter Lawrence, he's not as light-footed as those guys are, you know, but he's more dominant physically than those guys are. So I think he's a good athlete who just grew into a big physical football player who could play a four, you know, either three technique or a zero technique at the NFL level and just isn't going to wow you with the testing. I didn't expect him to test well. Like off the charts well, but film wise, there's just no comparison. I know Kinlaw is a great athlete at defensive tackle, but Derek Brown is far and away the number one guy.
All right, moving on. Now, this is a guy that's a little controversial for us. So Isaiah Simmons, he was a three-star recruit. He was from Kansas, and he kind of emerged late on the scene. Josh, we saw him at that camp in O'Fallon, famously. And you look back at the video now, and he was awesome, but we were kind of projecting him as a safety at that time, and he didn't have a ton of interest. Clemson came along kind of late, so what do you remember about him?
We can't talk about A.J. Epenesa or Cole Komet. I got to talk to No, but not at the top. Isaiah Simmons, rated as a high three-star. In that 5'7 territory, that's a guy who's not going to surprise us if he gets to the NFL. You know, we expect him to get a good look at the NFL, but – we're not talking about we projected him to be a first rounder. That's a miss. Isaiah Simmons, I'll tell you exactly what went into his evaluation. He was a safety out of Olathe, Kansas, Kansas City area kid. We saw him. I mean, we had him. He was at a rivals camp. We had eyes on with him. There were two big things that were a question mark with him. One was he was not very physical for the linebacker position. And so we didn't really see him kicking down there. Or if he did, we had some questions about how he was going to hold up at, you know, point of attack, those types of things. The other thing was, as a safety, he was a little stiff. So he's in that tweener body, and ultimately he ends up developing, I think, really the stiffness aspect that we were rare, you know, we definitely saw out of him in high school, was able to be worked out. He was able to become a more fluid, more flexible, more athletic kid, and obviously the clear number one linebacker in this class.
Mike, we seem to be getting there's a lot of these guys we're getting punished on are these safeties who we thought were kind of linebackers and they told us they were safeties. Do you think that's just result of the way the NFL's changed maybe in the last 3 or 4 years with offenses?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a kid like this is obviously, he would have been a high draft pick 10 years ago, but, you know, the way the NFL is, they want guys that can cover more than ever. And, you know, when you have a guy at safety who drops down the linebacker and has those coverage skills and he's 6'4", 235, and can run like a deer and play so many positions. I mean, he can blitz off the edge. You know, he can support the run. He can drop into pass coverage. He's got good ball skills. I mean, that type of do-everything guy is always wanted at the NFL level, but more so now than ever. And, you know, Simmons was a guy that sometimes you think, okay, he's versatile enough to play linebacker or safety, so that should be a plus. And I think sometimes that's a negative in our evaluations because we can't predict the future. We just don't know how big they're going to get. And that's what I saw with Simmons is, you know, what's he going to be? Now, looking at it today, maybe we look at guys that are betweeners between safety and linebacker and grade them higher. But it's so hard when they're playing one position. I mean, Luke Kuechly played safety in high school and obviously became one of the best linebackers in the NFL and in college football. There's just no way to see that. They're playing so far off the ball, and there's just no way to see those instincts. So, I don't know. I can't figure out those tweeners. I don't do well with tweeners.
It's a myth, and it was because, I, you know, from this standpoint, when we looked at him as a linebacker, we had questions about his physicality, whether he was going to be able to hold up at that. We looked at him as a safety. We had questions about his fluidity and his agility. And we didn't see the player he ultimately became. So at the end, I mean, this is an L. I'll take the L. It's he's obviously exceeded the expectations we had.
All right, moving on. Mekhi Becton. This is a guy that we had at the Rivals camp. I remember him winning MVP, probably weighed 370 pounds or something at the time. Friedman, you could talk about him. He was a 3-star when he won that MVP at the camp, correct? And we moved him up after that?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We loved him, too. He did a great job at the camp. He was putting guys on their backs. He was just a little bit slower out of his stance than we would have liked for one of those top 100 guys, you know, in the rankings process. But he was long, he was strong, and did a really good job with his feet. Like you said, though, being about 370-some-odd pounds at the time, or looked like it at least. He was still really impressive. But we just didn't understand that he was going to get that type of early playing time at Louisville and really blossom from there, you know, and through a coaching change, too. I mean, kudos to him for showing that work ethic and staying focused there. But just that was a hard projection to move him up even further in the Rivals 250, but it was still really impressive to see what he was able to do in the camp setting. When you turn on the game film, he was a great run blocker, and now when you see some of those clips out of Louisville, you know, as a pass blocker, even he's throwing guys around. So just a really impressive progression from him at the college level.
Mike, this is an example about what Rob was talking about earlier. It was just like last year that it was like, oh, the NFL doesn't like none of these linemen drafted were 300 pounders in high school. Well, I mean, Becton was almost like a 400 pounder. So do you remember seeing, were you at that camp with us?
Yeah. And then, you know, Evan Neal is the next one, you know, who's a 380 pound kid in high school and, you know, lost some weight throughout the process. Becton never did. Becton just was 370 pounds, 365, and just stayed there. But there's, you know, again, we saw a lump of clay, you know, this is a big kid, but we also felt he had to lose 30, 40 pounds to be successful at the next level. And we were wrong about that because he didn't have to. But I really think the early playing time is key for both he and Andrew Thomas. You're either going to be thrown into the water and you're going to drown or you're going to swim. And I think, you know, the guys that do the best as a freshman build that confidence. And then they just take it to the next level and the next level. And Becton is one of those guys. So I would take Wills first, but Becton's probably going to go first just because you can't teach 370 and he ran a 5.0.
Right.
Not that that matters, you know, you're not going to run 40 yards as an offensive lineman, but he's just so athletic for a big kid. The big ticket.
He's got the film from Louisville where he's running downfield on screen passes, putting, you know, guys on their back, defensive backs on their backs too. So he can run. And just for the record, we did have him listed 6'7", 340 on his profile coming out of high school, which is, you know, probably about 15, 20 pounds light. But, you know, the guys over from his high school still talk about, you know, that performance at the Rivals camp. And, you know, we're glad to get some eyes on him early there.
All right, let's move on. Rob, this one for you. CJ Henderson, defensive back, who we finished as a four-star, but I don't remember us seeing a ton of him. He was another one of those guys who didn't do a whole lot of talking, which is odd given, you know, the landscape there. So what do you remember about him other than that year he kind of really came to the Under Armour game and impressed us all?
We didn't see him a ton. I think I saw him one time in high school. And he was playing both ways. I remember him playing wide receiver and DB, but nobody really threw his way. There wasn't a lot of, you know, by the time I got to Florida, he was already kind of established as a dude on his high school team. You know how that goes. If you're not on an elite team, they throw away from you. So it's kind of limited what you can see. He didn't play a lot of 7-on-7. I think he did play 7-on-7, but he wasn't, you know, he was one of those guys that was on a different team every week at a different event. So you couldn't really figure out where he was. We always liked his length. We always liked his ball skills. I didn't know what position he was going to play until very late in the process, I remember. I think there was still talk of him being a wide receiver by the time he was halfway through his senior year. So the debate we had is, where do we like him more? I think finally everybody started recruiting him as DB, and that was kind of where we settled. I would have obviously liked to go back and rank him higher. It is a miss. I don't think it's significant. It's not like I made him a three-star. Where did he finish? A four-star in the back of the 250 or something?
Yeah, 226.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been worse, could have been better. I think if I could have it back, obviously I'd rank him higher. But he wasn't one that we were exposed to as much as some of these other kids in South Florida.
Mike, you were there at the Under Armour game that year when we moved him up, and you liked him, didn't you?
I did. I liked him a lot. He was a very smooth kid. And I think – I'm not sure. I think that was the same year Christian Fulton was there, and I didn't really like – Christian Fulton not much compared to Henderson. Henderson really closed on the football much better. He was a skinny kid, but he definitely had length, and he was really aggressive. And, you know, a kid who didn't take any plays off in practice, you know, really was there for, as they call it, a business trip. And I think that's why he pushed into the 250 at the end, because – you know, against elite guys, I remember Jalen Rager and some of the other receivers he would go against were pretty talented guys, and he held his own.
All right, guys. Anybody else we really – I mean, there's plenty more names we can touch on. Anybody else you guys really want to talk about before we wrap up?
Can we talk about Cam Akers?
Okay. All right. So Cam's probably – not going to go in the first round. I don't know where he's
going. Yeah, he's like a second or third round guy.
All right. So we had him as a five-star. He was in the conversation for number one overall.
I still insist that he's going to be a good NFL player. I think he got dealt a bad situation. I mean, I just can't imagine, having seen this kid in games, and we can call him the Rob Caskey sleeper pick of the draft if you want. Having seen this kid in games, and having seen him play running back and quarterback, and then having to go and play behind whatever that was that Florida State had an offensive line for the last 3 years, really kind of hurt him. I still believe in this. I still believe he was the best running back in that class.
No. Najee Harris was the best running back in the class.
I know. I still disagree with this statement.
Najee Harris is going to be a first-round next year, and he will be drafted higher than Cam Akers. So the argument when Cam started.
Well, he's
going to
be drafted higher than Cam Akers. They didn't make Najee Harris play behind Willie Taggart's offensive line. He's going to be drafted higher. I just think that Cam Akers will be a better NFL player.
All we heard from Rob was, I told you. And Najee was like, we're waiting for him to – there wasn't a transfer portal at the time, but we're waiting for him to hit the portal because he's not playing. And, you know, just Rob was very, very annoying.
I took a victory for that. Too early.
The question is if Cam Akers kept that Alabama commitment that he had, would he be a sure-fire first-round pick?
Yes. Yeah, he's running behind the Alabama offensive line.
He's still not as athletic as Najee Harris.
No.
If you switch them places, I don't know. I think that we're having a very different conversation right now because we're talking about Cam Akers going in the top in the first round for sure.
I think if you switched in places, Najee would have been out of Tallahassee in 18 months and would be somewhere else instead of going into the draft. That's what I think. All right. Anybody else you guys want to talk about?
There's one guy I think is one of the most interesting guys in this draft, and he probably slips into the back end of the first round. That's Zach Bond out of Wisconsin. This is another guy that Wisconsin, you know, Ryan Ramczyk, remember him? Talked about J.J. Watt. Neither of those guys did they offer. They didn't offer J.J. Watt out of high school. He went to Central Michigan, transferred in as a walk-on. Ryan Ramczyk went to the University of Wisconsin out of high school, the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point, and then ultimately came over like as a late grad transfer. Zach Bond was a guy who played quarterback in high school. Wisconsin didn't offer him until his senior year. His only other offer was an FCS offer from South Dakota State. He moves over to linebacker and becomes, one of the top defensive players in this draft. I just think he's, a really interesting story because it's on that same story arc of players at Wisconsin and what Wisconsin does in terms of developing talent that obviously nobody really saw. And I honestly, they didn't really see in a lot of these games.
Yeah,
you want to let Friedman brag about DeAndre Swift?
I was going to let the Georgia guys kind of take credit for that. They loved him early in the process. I loved him early in the process too. And, you know, he came to our camps. He did well at our camps. And, you know, we liked what we saw from him, but at the time we were a little higher on those other running backs. And he kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit because he's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy, but he produced at a high, high level. And, being able to be in a rotation at Georgia like he was, I think really helped him in college. I was a big DeAndre Swift fan at the high school level. I kept asking you guys about him, seeing what you guys thought about him. But I guess he didn't do enough for you guys to make him.
You weren't at that five-star challenge, right? When it was Akers and Harris and Swift.
I wasn't there that year. I had
and his dad wedding. Wanted to, put me in a headlock and – because I kept writing about – there was a fourth running back in that group, too.
Stephen Carr, I think.
Yeah, Stephen
Who?
Carr. Yeah.
And, okay.
We kept writing about,
him. Yeah.
And we kept writing about Cam Akers, and we didn't write enough about Swift. His dad's jacked. I mean, he's a very –
But if you saw Elijah Judy's dad when he just committed to Georgia a few minutes ago, he's even bigger than DeAndre Swift's dad, so I wouldn't get in a fight with either one of those guys. But yeah. The two of them,
upset.
Yeah. DeAndre I wouldn't mess own. With either one of them.
Held his own, for sure. Well, he was the highest ranked four-star. You know, he was just one shy of that fifth star, and that was me who held him back from there. So
I think another Georgia running back in the past was the highest ranked four-star.
Big Chubb.
Yeah.
Yeah, guess what? He went in the second round. Exactly where he was ranked.
That's right.
Well, Todd Gurley was also a high star.
All right.
Well, spot for Georgia running backs.
We know the ones that we put as fives. I mean, Sony Michel was a first rounder, so that worked out well. But, you know, I think the only person on this Zoom call that believes Kendall Milton's a five star is that West Coast guy. So we'll
I think Jordan has a pretty good track record at the position. I'll take my chances.
Their track record is better with four stars than they are with five stars,
That's
I guess.
True.
So.
True.
I'd also like to point out, and I don't know if we want to talk about it or not, but the last three number one picks will all be transfer quarterbacks. And if somehow Justin Fields moves up to number one next year, which is at least a small possibility, that will be 4 years in a row.
Hey, not too late for Tate Martell either, man. He could be.
I know. I'm saying it. I'm holding out hope here.
Still time.
Next year will be the Tate Martell and Kellen Mond draft. So,
1 and 2, respectively.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for us. Hopefully you enjoyed listening or watching or whatever. I think we're going to put this on some podcast feeds as well. Stay locked in, rivals.com. We got a ton of draft coverage this week and, of course, during the draft throughout the weekend from the whole team. So, everybody, thanks for joining, and hopefully we can do this again.